Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
You know, it's funny how over the years you make contact with people, and at the time, I think you know that there's, you know, there's just a connection that you form with people that are kind of like-minded or maybe on a similar, what I like to say, a similar vibration, understanding of things. And maybe time slips away, and you don't hear from them for a while, and then maybe you reconnect in some way. And, you know, it's nice to come full circle like that, because I know there's a lot of people in my life that I've met, and I was hoping someday maybe you run into them again. And you always wonder if it's all connected. The person I'm going to talk to today, she's a comedian, but she's much more than that. Her name is Kathy Dice. She lives in Cleveland, and we won't hold that against her, that she lives there in Cleveland. No, do you do any jokes about Cleveland at all, Kathy?
I actually live in Hinckley, so I do have a joke about that.
Okay. You live close to Cleveland. Hinckley is a suburb? Okay. So how long ago was it that we worked together? Back in the 90s?
Late 90s.
Okay. And you worked at the radio station. You also worked, we had a DJ company, which I didn't know, but I ran, and you were one of the DJs I hired. So how are you doing? It's good to talk to you.
I'm doing great. Things are picking up, and life is looking good.
Now, I remember back then, of course, you did some dances with your husband, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just kind of the brawn. You were kind of you were the brains, and he was the brawn, right?
That was the days that the amps and everything weighed 800 pounds, and I couldn't lift them.
But you told me then that you had a dream of being a comedian. And so you really kind of getting your feet wet a little bit doing that. And then how did that progress? Where are you at now?
Actually, well, at the time, I didn't know that I was supposed to be a comedian. That kind of came before the horse, so to speak. If you want to hear the story about...
Yeah.
About that would be... Well, when I was about maybe 7 years old or so, I had a vision. I was laying in my bed, and I saw a picture of my mother standing on a black stage, wearing black, with a microphone, and people were laughing. And I never knew what that meant. It was just so, you know, out there and weird. But it kind of scared me for some reason. I don't know why, but it never left me. That vision stayed with me for years. And then... through the years, I started doing things like the DJ thing. You know, I always liked performing. I liked being in plays, and I always liked making people laugh. As a hairdresser, you know, I had a captive audience, so they couldn't go anywhere. And if they didn't laugh, I would screw up their hair or something like that. So I just, you know, always told jokes. And my favorite people, my heroes, were comedians. I would watch comedians, and I wouldn't just watch them to, you know, have a laugh. I would watch how they said it. I would watch their delivery, you know, everything. Timing, I learned all that stuff. Not knowing, you know, where it was going to lead. So finally, I did the DJ business with you, and I can't really say that I liked it, because it was hard putting yourself out there like that and being on display and, you know, always knowing that somebody could call and complain because you said the wrong thing or something. But anyway, while I lived up in the UP during that time, I found a little blurb in the Good Housekeeping magazine that said, you know, do you want to do stand-up comedy? And I was like, oh, yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to. Well, it happened to be an advertisement for a week-long workshop in the Catskill Mountains of New York with being taught by Lewis Black. And at the time, Lewis wasn't, you know, he wasn't really well-known, but he was a national touring headliner. He lived in New York, so I, you know, like I said, I didn't really know who he was, but I thought it was kind of cool. So my husband said, well, if you can find somebody to go with you, you know, you can go. Because they had to drive it, obviously. Anyway, I called everybody I knew to see if they could go, and I finally found a woman that would like to go with me to take the acting class. So we got in the car, and we drove, I think, 2 days to get there. And took the class, and when I got back, I joined a model or a talent agency, And one of the guys there was a comedian, and we kind of hooked up. Well, through him, I got to do some, you know, open mics and showcase nights and stuff. So I went to a comedy club, did a showcase. My husband taped it. A few months later, I got a call from a friend in Michigan. She says, oh, you got to send in your tape because they're having a contest. The Fox 2 News and the Palace of Auburn Hills are having a comedy contest. So it happened to be the, like, very last day you could send it in, so I did. And not expecting anything, really, but I was kind of excited about it. It was like one of those things where you kind of know. So I sent it in, and they never told me what was going on, but I happened to be in Michigan at my parents' house the night that they showed, you know, the finalists that they picked.
Mm-hmm. They showed it on TV, right?
Yes, on the news, Fox 2 News. So
really?
I, you know, ordinarily, I mean, it was just fluky that I was actually there because I don't get Fox 2 News here, obviously, in Cleveland.
Right.
So I happened to be there, and I turned on the news, and they said, coming up, the finalists, three finalists for the comedy competition, and they showed my tape.
Hmm.
And I just stood there, and I was like, you know, I was stark sighted. I was like, oh, look, you know, and I'm looking around, and like, nobody was home. I was there alone.
Right.
So, and then all of a sudden, I looked again, and the hair in the back of my neck just stood on, and I was like, oh, my goodness. I saw myself standing on a black stage wearing black with a microphone, and people were
wow.
Like, and it just, it was like, wow.
The vision you had, right? Wow.
Yes, it was amazing. So from there, I just knew that I was on the right path, even then every time I get really discouraged and think, oh, this isn't, you know, like, I'm quitting. I remember that vision, and I remember that's where I'm supposed to be, whether it's to be a comedian or a performer or a speaker that does humor or whatever. My job is to make people laugh.
Your job is to make people laugh, but also, you know, I know you've got a lot more going on inside of you,
mm-hmm.
the depth of you, and so you and I were talking before we came on, you know, with the show, and maybe you've kind of felt that maybe some of that needs to come forward, and you can use humor in presenting that.
Yes, very definitely.
You feel driven to do that somewhat. And that's why I'm having you on the show. Guess what? That's why you're on, right?
Wow. What a coinkydink.
It's all coinkydinks. So,
I don't believe in coincidence, but that's...
Well, just like that, being it happened to be in that town when you saw the news. That's more than a coincidence, right?
Right.
So...
go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, this show really is about, I think it's good to laugh. I love that. I love it. I love listening to comedians. I'm kind of silly when I'm on the radio, too. And I think all of us probably like that somewhat, you know. It makes us feel good. Actually, I think it, you know, even heals us. Don't you think that?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I just read something today on the air, more research. It said that people that believe they're stressed are actually going to, you know, if you have a lot of stress and you believe you're stressed, then you're going to get even worse. It's even going to get,
oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, there are days when I'm really stressed around here, but I don't even worry about it anymore. And it doesn't seem to affect me. You think, oh, it's going to be a long day. I'm going to be tired. Well, then you are going to be.
Well, you attract that. And I find it's funny because as you called, I was talking to my sister about that very same thing.
Really?
She's so worried about, you know, she's been making a few mistakes at work. And, you know, we all make mistakes, but they're mistakes that she knows. She's been doing these things for years, and she knows how to do, but she's, you know, making mistakes. And I said, the more you stress about it and the more you focus on it, you're going to attract more to you because you attract what you focus on.
I agree.
If you're focusing on, I'm going to make a mistake, well, you're going to make a mistake.
So it's like the law of attraction, right?
Exactly.
And is that like when you saw, you were telling me about The Secret? Was that something you,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I agree with that. It's like it's happened to me my whole life, really. A lot of things have been drawn to me, especially if I focus on it for a long period of time. And if you put emotion into it, it seems like it comes forward.
Oh, yes.
And
that is key to that.
Sometimes it takes longer, it seems. But, well, Kathy, I was going to give you an opportunity because this, you know, you have an incredible story to tell about your son, and I'm glad that you want to share that. But do you want to do any of your jokes at all? Do you want to do any comedy material? I can be your audience.
You can be my audience.
Yeah.
Just for the fun of it. You talked about the jokes about where I live. I do live in Hinckley, Ohio, and I always ask if anybody knows what Hinckley is famous for, because I don't care wherever I go in the country, at least one person will know. And the answer, of course, is the buzzards.
Mm, okay.
It's the annual
right, the migration.
Like, yeah. Anyway, I say, well, did you know that Jeffrey Dahmer was born and raised not far from here, which explains the buzzards?
Oh.
It's a groan and a laugh. But, oh, let's see. I do a lot of hairdresser jokes because I'm a hairdresser also. I love being a hairdresser. I love my job. It's the people I can't stand.
Mm.
There's always one lady that comes in the door and she, you know, I'm not going to say she was ugly, but Turkey Vulture comes to mind.
Jeez.
Do you have any suggestions for me? And I'm like, yes, go home. Take this paper bag with you. She stayed, and she brought me that picture that she cut out of Victoria's Secret catalog. She says, can you make me look like this? I said, sure. So I pasted it to her face.
Jeez.
Just like her.
Wow.
Except they had to super glue because it wouldn't stick to her beak.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, you tell people that up on stage?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, I know you say you have some kind of adult ones that you do, too.
Oh, or it gets worse.
What are some of those?
Well, the hairdresser jokes, I get kind of... I've got one that... It's actually based on a true story, so that's what makes it even funnier.
Mm.
But I had... You know, I would say, I don't want to gross you out, but I had a lady come in one time. She had psoriasis so bad it looked like she had cornflakes growing on the back of her head.
Mm.
I didn't know what to do, so I gave her a bowl cut. Then I gave her highlights, and she had frosted flakes.
Oh, jeez. Wow. These people...
Well, I do humor about living with my husband. You know, he's always been a wealth of material for me, different things, and just getting older, you know, the menopause thing.
Mm.
I know I'm getting older because the other day I woke up with this incredible craving for Metamucil.
No ice cream, right? Just Metamucil.
My husband, he thinks he's a jokester. I was cleaning the bathroom the other day, and the drain was plugged, so I used Drano, and I happened to leave the can on the counter, and he comes in and says, what, the Metamucil's not working anymore?
Jeez. How often do you do shows?
Well, it depends. I have a rule anywhere from 1 to 5 or 6 times a month. Depends on the month. They're starting to get more. That's actually, I'm getting more and more bookings now, and that's what I was going to say. You know, we mentioned earlier about the things you focus on and the emotion that you attach to it. When, for a long time, even though I knew this was my path and this is what I was supposed to do, I still did not believe in myself, and I still had a lot of negative emotion about who I was and my abilities and everything else. You know, you think, oh, I'm not good enough, or nobody's going to like me, or whatever.
Right.
So
it really holds It really holds us back, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it does, definitely. And so when I was in that state, you know, I'd get a booking here and there, and people would get up, you know, I'd get up and say, oh, you were so wonderful, you know, you should be working. And then it wouldn't happen because I didn't think that I believed in that they would book me. Well, I've really, really, really been working on myself and my own self-image and self-esteem for these 2 or 3 years now, at least, and have finally come to the point where I do believe in myself. And I get, rather than having the dread and the negative emotion attached to getting a show, getting a booking, I've now learned how to attach a happy, you know, expectant, joyous emotion to it. And the gigs are coming to me, falling in my lap.
That's
whereas
cool.
Before it was like, ah, no.
And how did you? And so you've just changed the way you focus on. Do you
right.
spend time during the day thinking about this?
Not. Well, that's the thing. I don't have a ritual, so to speak, other than I've just spent, like I said, years working on how to change my outlook. I do what they call, the biggest thing that helped me was a thing called EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tapping, they call it tapping.
Right.
Tap on the energy, the chakra points, and you talk about, as you're tapping on the couple of points, that you bring out all the negativity. You bring out, oh, even though I'm a bad person, I completely love and accept myself. That's kind of what they call the setup statement. So you say, even though I'm, and then you fill in the blanks, whatever you're feeling negatively, and then you follow it up with, I love, completely love and accept myself. And you do that three times. And then you go through the chakra points, and you start tapping on that negative emotion and all the stuff that it brings up. And, you know, I've even gotten to the point where there have been times when I didn't even have words. All I did was, like, cried, and I just kept tapping through these negative emotions. And, in fact, it was a radio podcast that happened that way. I was recommended to call into a podcast for a radio show in Vegas, these two guys, and they were kind of thinking that they were the Howard Stern of the internet type thing. So they were really nasty, and they were just, and of course, oh, man. And I felt very uncomfortable, and that was back in the day when I didn't really believe in myself. So
right.
It did not go very well, and they were stoned. And after I hung up the phone, they just, you know, that was the way I want to take a shower. That was, and so it was just horrible, 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 horrible.
You know, I really don't like that neither. I like humor, but I can't stand that kind of negativity at somebody else's expense.
Exactly, and that's exactly where I am. So anyway, that night I was so upset, so all I could do was cry, so I just cried and cried, and then all of a sudden it was like, you know what, this isn't my problem, it's theirs.
Yep.
And my whole emotion changed, and I was able to just let it go, get rid of it, and you know, I laugh about it now, it doesn't bother me. So,
you know, the world is changing, and I can see this in radio. The day of the shock jock, who say anything to get a rise out of people, no matter how vulgar or whatever it is, slamming somebody down, those days are ending. Because people, you can only shock them for so long. And to me, that's, like Bill Cosby said, that's the easy way out.
It is.
And to really craft and write something, you write your own jokes, I'm guessing.
Yes.
And you draw from your own life experiences.
Right.
And that, I think, is always so cool. Because it really takes a skill. You got to develop that, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And that's what people want to hear. They want to hear about you and how you dealt with things and how you make them funny. And a lot of the stuff, especially people that they can relate to it, like I've found lately, you know, when I do my menopause, post-menopause jokes, you know, most of my audiences quite often are older, and, you know, I always have women, oh, I can still relate to that, and that's what makes them laugh even harder, is because they know what you're talking about.
Exactly. Finding that common ground with people.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, do you ever play for do you ever perform for younger groups? Do you have to change gears on that?
That's my interesting thing. When the demographic is, say, 22, 32-ish, generally speaking, sometimes it depends on, now, that's the other interesting thing. If I'm confident and I don't care that they're younger and then they may not get it, if I go out there with every confidence that they're going to like it, they do.
That's so true, isn't it?
But if I go out there and think, they're not going to like me, they're not going to relate it, then they don't.
You know, it's the same thing with being on the radio. It's like I used to not feel comfortable with what I was doing. It took a long time.
Really?
And I've been doing this for 30 years, and there just came a day, one, when I let go. I think letting go is so huge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like that with everything in life. You know, if you want the law of attraction to work or whatever, you have to let go of your dream, you know. You have to put it out there, but let go of it, not worry about it.
Exactly.
And the same with being on the air. I had to stop worrying what people might think of me.
Yep.
Yeah, and some of the things I said. And then it's almost like, has this happened to you, Kathy? I'm sure it has. It's like you're channeling. It's like something unlocks in your brain, and these things just start coming to you.
Yes.
And to me, it's like you're channeling this humor energy, or whatever you want to call it. You're tapping into it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's what gives you inspiration. That's what gives you creativity. That's what gives you, you know, whether you're an artist or whether you write a song. How many times have you heard an artist, a singer, write a song, and they say they got the inspiration through a dream? It came to them. And have you gotten, like, jokes in your dreams before?
Not necessarily my dreams, but when I'm supposed to be sleeping is when that's the best time, because it's when you open your mind up and you like get rid of the negative thoughts and you just kind of open up and do the free thought or the brainstorming, and you just kind of keep going, and all of a sudden boom, boom, boom. The more you do that, the more the thoughts come in, and the more you're like, say if you're doing another activity like driving, which you should pay attention to driving, but your mind is kind of free and you're just, wandering. And I get a lot of good stuff when I'm driving or taking a shower or, you're doing something else mindless, but thinking, using the subconscious thoughts to come forward.
Did you ever notice, because this has happened to me as well, just being around maybe a group of good or pretty good comedians or people that are similar to what you're doing, does that raise your level?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Isn't that funny how that works? And it's not like it's anything physical. It's more like a mental thing. Like you somehow become up to... I remember playing basketball when I was a kid, and I was one of the worst players on the team in eighth grade. I mean, I'm not very coordinated. And I can't shoot the ball very well.
You're not very tall.
No. And I'm not very tall, neither. You're right. And so... But I played with the best kid in school. I mean, he was a really great athlete. And we played two other kids, and he threw me the ball. He kept feeding me the ball. And I was making every shot. And he says, why don't you play like that in the game? And at the time, I didn't know about, but it was because I, just being around his energy is the way I feel. It lifted me up.
Yeah, that's part of it, I think. But it's also the fact that he believed in you enough to throw you the ball.
Mm-hmm. And so I believed it, too.
Right. He helped you to believe in yourself.
That's amazing.
If he believes I can do it, then I must be able to do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the one time in my life in basketball that I actually made a bunch of points. And I just know that it had something to do with being around him,
right.
Lifted me up. So I wanted to move on to, and let me know if any of this is uncomfortable for you, because this really is personal. But I think it's such an incredible story. And you don't mind sharing this, do you, Kathy?
No, in fact, I'm writing a book about it.
That's true. Then we can have you on for that too, right? Anytime you want.
Okay.
I got to know you in the 90s, but you were carrying around a pretty heavy heart, weren't you?
Yes.
Even then?
Mm-hmm.
What happened? You had a son that was born in, 1977?
1977, yes.
And you've had other children. How many other children do you have?
I've got two, boy and a girl.
And now he would have been the oldest, this one?
Yes.
So he's your first child, and what happened to him?
Well, he was born with several severe heart defects. And they called it transposition of the great vessels, which means that the artery and the vein that come out of the heart, they come out of the heart, and then they're supposed to cross like in a figure eight and go to the lungs, and that's what allows the blood to mix with the oxygen and, go to the rest of the body. Well, his did not cross. They came straight down, and so it was like two circles side by side, so the blood wasn't mixing with the oxygen.
Hmm.
And he's about 3 months old. Well, all babies are born with a hole in the upper chamber of the heart.
They are.
That's normal.
Okay.
And then within a few days, usually, it closes.
Okay.
That's the normal procedure. Well, his did not close, which was a good thing, because that was because of the way his vein and artery were, he was still able to get enough oxygen to be able to live with that hole in his heart. Well, then about three and a half months, it did close. Well, of course, now he's drowning. the blood was flooding to his lungs, and the pulmonary artery that comes out of the heart was very dilated. So he was in what they call congestive heart failure and drowning. Well, we went, obviously took him to the hospital. He was at Children's Hospital in Detroit. And they did surgery. They actually surgically opened that hole again to allow the blood to flow, and then they put out what they call a band on the pulmonary artery to constrict it so it wasn't, flooding blood into the lungs like they were. So after that, he was great. And we knew that we had to look forward to surgery again when he was probably about two. That was supposed to fix him.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, back in the late 70s, they didn't have, of course, the technology and the know-how that they do now. Well, my first thought when they said we have to fix it was, well, switch the vein and the artery back. That seems simple to me. Why can't you just, cut them off, regraft them?
Right.
But no, they didn't do that back then. What they did then was they had to go in and close that hole. But they also put what they call a baffle, which was like a spiral. I think Dacron or whatever. I don't know what it was. But anyway, it was a spiral thing that the blood was supposed to circulate that way. And there was, I don't even remember, but there's something about a pig valve that they put in there. And anyway, then they realized that he had a number of small holes in the lower chamber of the heart, which is not necessarily good. Well, they did what they could, and he came to the surgery fine, and then in the 8 hours after the surgery, he started having these, what they call fibrillation spells, where the heart doesn't beat right, you know, it flutters, and you know, the top doesn't match the bottom and whatever. So they would had to do the chalk, what do you call that, the paddles or whatever. And each, he had a number of spells, and each time it just took longer and longer to get it back to where it was supposed to be. And then 8 hours later, he ended up, they couldn't do any more. It was too much. So so he died, and it was probably the, well, no, not probably, it was the worst moment of my life. I felt like I died with him. It was like a piece of me just totally left. And in the years since, I found out that it was actually true. It was like a part of my soul just left.
How long did you struggle with that?
Many, many, many years. It's, let me see, it, he would have been 35 this year. And it's been only really and truly in the last probably 2 years that I've been okay with it. So, I mean, you know, people think, oh, you grieve for a year or whatever, and then you're done with it. No, it doesn't work that way.
Did you get a lot of people besides me that tried to give you, you know, some kind of comfort by telling you something? I mean, I know a lot of people mean well, but did that ever bother you? People saying, well, you know, if you do this or blah, blah, blah.
Because everybody grieves in their own way, and it did used to upset me, and especially some of the people don't know. That's the other thing that I would like to get out there to the world is what to say to a grieving person. Because people do say the wrong, you know, I mean, I can't tell you that people say, oh, well, you can have another one. I don't want another one. I want that one, you know. It's not like it's a puppy, and even then you still have that attachment to it.
Right.
You know? They'll say, oh, it was God's will, or, you know, this is the way it was meant to be. Well, okay, you lose a child and tell me if that's what it's meant to be. It doesn't work that way. And like I said, it's, I mean, when anybody in your life dies, it's distressful, but when you lose a child, it's like they're part of you. And he was pretty much my life. My husband was working two jobs, and, you know, so he was all I really had. And it was, So, yeah, people do, and I never forget, and I think this was a lesson, you know, I believe that people are thrown into your path for a reason. And there's a reason that everybody is there. Well, and I think this is the reason that this happened, was the next day after he died, two of the pillars of the church, the stalwarts, whatever, you know, they were, and I'd known these guys all my life. They were older men, and I knew their kids and everything else. They came to the house. They walked in the door. They didn't say anything, really. All they did was hug me. And Nori, the one guy, he just, I always, every time I'd go there, I'd, I got to have a Nori hug because he was the best hugger in the world. And he gave me a huge hug. Harris gave me a huge hug. They stayed for a minute. They didn't really say much, and then they left. And that is the memory that I have, one of the biggest memories I have. And it meant so much to me, and I think that's all we need. You know, you think, oh, I got to do this, I got to do this. What am I going to say? You know, you don't need to say anything.
All right.
Just be there, show your love, give a hug. That's all you need to do.
Well, and then also, you know, something that kind of strikes me when you're saying that is that I think we all mean well, whether it's in tragedy or whatever, or maybe giving people advice. But I've really learned in the last few years, everybody is a sovereign entity that's on their own journey. And if you try to alter that in any way, you really shouldn't be doing that because it's their journey. So maybe you need to ask permission even to, or if they want some advice and they ask for it. Otherwise, maybe it's best just to let things go, right? Allow them.
It's exactly right. And I was something I was telling somebody the other day. You know, he thinks that he can fix everybody. Well, you can't fix somebody unless they want to be fixed.
Exactly.
And even then, all you can do is offer suggestions. They have to do their own fixing. You know, like you said, you're on your own journey. It's all about you and what you do.
As we step back from it, you know, we start to realize, well, really, this is my, these people are a part of my journey, but it really is about me learning, isn't it?
Exactly.
And I can't learn if somebody tells me what it is, or I got to learn it from, well, some people want some help, and that's cool. But otherwise, you got to allow people to get it for themselves. And that's kind of the way I do this show, is that we present these things, and I don't know if I always agree with everything that's said, but I think it's cool because people can either get it, or they can say, you know, I don't care.
And even if they say, I don't care, you've planted that seed, and maybe 10 years down the road, all of a sudden, something will happen, you know. It's like, wow.
And I also look at it like it doesn't really matter, you know. It really
right.
doesn't. Go ahead. What were you saying you remember?
You remember, you know, something that somebody said to you years ago, and it planted a seed, and now all of a sudden it's making sense, and now you are taking that lesson.
Hmm.
You know, it's all about divine timing, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Everything happens in its own time.
Right, right.
When it's supposed to.
And you know what, Kathy, too? Sometimes it doesn't. You could plant
right.
a seed, you could tell somebody, and maybe it's meant for them to hear it, but they may not get it. And that's not the end of the world, neither, because they chose not to. We always have these choices. And if we don't get it this time, do you believe that maybe we'll come back and try it again?
Oh, I do. I didn't used to, but I do now. We do come back for different experiences. I mean, I grew up Methodist, you know. Oh, heaven forbid you'd believe in reincarnation. That's terrible, terrible, terrible. But now that I'm starting to learn lessons and see things and hearing things and experiencing things, I realize that there is more to that than, you know, we are all divine. We are spiritual beings having a human experience.
Well, that's well said. So what made you come to peace about your son? How did you, you said this was a couple of years ago. What happened?
Well, it started probably, oh, I don't know. The first time was maybe 10 or 15 years ago when I read a book.
Which book was that?
It was called Embraced by the Light. And I know you're going to ask me who wrote it.
I know which one.
I think her name was Barbara Easley or something.
Right, I know who you're talking about.
Okay, that was the one that kind of took a little bit of the veil away, so to speak. And she talks about, you know, when we're, I'm using these terms because a lot of people don't believe in the actual terms, but whatever, you know, the heavenly, the universe, whatever, when we're there in the spiritual state, we have soul groups, basically, or soul families, whatever you want to call it, and as a rule, I've read so much stuff, there's the Akashic Records, I don't know if you've heard
mm-hmm.
about those.
Yep.
But talking about, you know, soul groups, and quite often you will stay within that particular soul group. So you make contracts with different souls, different
mm-hmm.
entities.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, okay, I'm going to be your son in this life.
Isn't that something?
And you pick your parents, so to speak.
Right.
I want to be your, you know, whatever, whatever. And so it's, when I heard that he chose to be my son, and we made this contract, all of a sudden it was like, wow, okay, we're not just human material running around there, you know, randomly. This was all chosen. There was a reason he came here.
What was the
reason? I didn't know the
reason
at the time, but, you know, in the years since, I have searched and found, and now I'm at peace with it because, okay, that's the way it was supposed to be.
So what?
That's what we set up.
What happened to make you believe that this was true?
Well, I finally connected with an astrologer and a psychic medium out of Washington State. And it was really fluky how I got in touch with her. There was through all this stuff that I've been researching and doing, there was a little tiny blurb, if you want a reading, so to speak, a 5-minute reading. You know, send me your information. So I did, and never expecting anything to come of it. And she called me out of the blue one day and started talking. And she and a number of readers since then have told me that, you know, he was supposed to be here for 2 years. And in order to, well, that wasn't even the first time. The first time I was a shaman, actually. She had told me that he was here to help me, but he couldn't help me on this plane.
Mm.
He had to help me do what I'm supposed to do from the other planes. And but this astrologer, she said, and the reason I knew that he was there helping me was because we were talking, and something was said about my son that died, and she said, oh, well, how old would he be? And I said, well, he's been, you know, like 30, 32. And she said, oh, my goodness, she said, this guy has been standing over my shoulder this whole time, and he keeps bugging me, and he won't leave me alone, and he keeps flexing his muscles. And he says, I'm trying to get buffed up. I got to get buffed up because I want to be in the fire department. Well, to most people, that wouldn't mean anything, but I almost fell off my chair because in my hometown, where my family all lives, my great-grandfather started the fire department. My grandfather was fire chief. My father was chief for years. My brother-in-law is now chief, and the entire family is, in one way or another, involved in the fire department.
Wow.
I've got brothers-in-law, and my sister even is on the fire department. So the fire department was a big deal in my family. And he was even, when he was, that first time that he, when his, that hole closed in his heart, the fire department had come because he had stopped breathing, and, you know, they did what they had to do. So, you know, the fire department was a big deal. So when she said that, I was like, wow, you know.
You knew that was real. You knew that was a good
show. And I knew it was real.
And then when that became real. Now, have you had him around you? Have you sensed him? Have you seen things? Have you?
I haven't so much. Other than when I've had a reader tell me that he's always there, and he loves my sense of humor. He loves my wicked sense of humor, and he prompts me to say the things that I do.
Mm.
Sometimes I will say inappropriate things, and he just kind of jumps up and down with glee when I do that. And I'm, now it's like, you know, oh, geez, I can blame it on him. You know, it's not my fault.
Yeah, you wonder. Isn't that something, Kathy? You wonder sometimes, you know, we think a thought is coming to us, but what if somebody, what if a, like a guide or a, in this case, you know, I guess your son would kind of like be a guardian, or be a guardian angel. What if they're putting that in our head? You know, we think we got an original thought, and it's like, no, maybe it's coming from someone else.
Well, I do believe that. I mean, obviously we do have our own thoughts because we're not just zombies walking around. But
right,
but I do think we can be, you know, hit over the head with something.
Yeah, somebody can. And the thing is, if they can do that, if somebody, let's say, that loves us can influence us, just imagine if there are other energies out there that can influence us as well. So it can work both ways. And that's why, you know, if you are, maybe you're going through tough times in your life, sometimes maybe there's some darker energies around, and you can protect yourself from that with the light being around you. Some people say you do that, or you can burn sage, or you can... If you think you got a negative spirit in your house, is what I'm saying, you know. You can also ask the Archangel Michael around you, have the angels stand in the... Whatever. I mean, we all have some guardians around. We are not helpless beings. So now you find out that your son, you really believe, he was only here for 2 years to introduce himself to you, and now he wants to kind of be a guardian spirit around you.
Right.
And it's to help you become what? To become what you are now, or...
Well, I feel everything I've done in my life, as far as what I've heard, what I've read, what I've experienced, what I've practiced, what I've taken classes for, you know, like I said, starting with the acting, taking acting lessons, the DJ business, doing the stand-up, taking all those classes, the writing, the speak, well, I'm Toastmasters now, so I'm learning how to speak, and I think all of that has been given to me over the years, and now I'm coming full circle, and I'm going to use all of that in, you know, whatever I'm going to do, whether it's the speaking, workshops, writing, you know, all of that stuff is going to come together and gel so I can help other people overcome. You know, like you said, I can't make you change, I can't make you heal, but I can plant seeds.
And you can also lead by example, too, right?
Exactly. And then I can give you that humor. I'll never forget one night I did a show in a bowling alley, no less, on the lanes. And
really?
This, yeah. Set up a stage. I've done a few of those. Those are really interesting. In fact, I did one on Unisync once.
Really? Wow. That's in Michigan, by the way, those of you listening outside the area.
Yeah.
Not far from...
Up into
Michigan. Yeah.
But anyway, this one woman came up to me, and she had tears in her eyes, and she hugged me, just this huge hug, and she says, "Oh, I can't thank you enough for allowing me to laugh." She said, "I needed this so much." She said, "You wouldn't believe what's going on at my house." And I hadn't said anything about my son, obviously, but she said, my son is 6 months old, and he is so sick, and, you know, he could be dying, and I needed this night out to laugh so much. Thank you. And she just thanked me over and over, and I'm like, wow, this is why I do what I do.
Do you ever talk about that in your comedy?
No, I haven't yet. I have on, like, on my speaking.
Okay.
In fact, in my book that I'm writing, I had written a piece, and I belong to a writer's group, and I was able to read it. And I throw humor in there. You know, I mean, I don't care if you're at a funeral. There's still things to laugh about.
You know, in the moment, sometimes there isn't, but afterwards, there's a lot of things, you know?
Well, even in front of the casket, I have been known to do things that make people laugh. I just, why not? You know, it's celebrating that person's life. In my writer's group, I was writing, I mean, it was deep, really deep, and we're talking about the night he died, for crying out loud. It was very sorrowful and sad and blah, 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 and I threw in a joke or two, not really a joke, but, you know, something humorous, and the group laughed.
Right.
And I think it gets to that point where, you know, you get so deep, you have to release that tension somehow, so you can, and I can't tell you the comments I got afterwards, you know, that you have such a gift to be able to, you know, talk about this really deep, dark stuff, but yet make people laugh in the middle of it. And, you know, I know I'm on the right path when I hear things like that.
Well, you know, and you also look at anything. People that are successful, whether they're speakers, professional speakers for businesses, motivational, they always mix humor into it. And so I think we all want to. It puts us at ease. It makes us feel good. Humor, to me, is really what exists in heaven. Anything positive and upbeat, joy and humor, I think those are really godlike qualities, if you want to call it that,
yeah.
To define it that. Now, you were telling me also that one of the books you read, because it's funny, because I know when I talked to you, I don't know if we talked how deep, I don't remember. Do you remember how, did we get into deeper things like this?
Oh, yeah, we talked about it all the time. We just talked for hours.
Yeah, I know we did some of that on the phone. But I don't remember if we talked about your son and if I offered anything in return.
I don't. You know, it's so funny. All I can remember is we talked about deep stuff for hours, but I can't give you specifics.
And at the time, you were still kind of hanging on to your religious beliefs, right?
Right, exactly.
And you were willing to talk to me, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Because I think I knew, I think deep down I knew something else was out there. I knew there were different answers that I was not getting. I mean, nothing against the church. You know, I still go to church. I still believe. It's like I believe all of these realms rather than just one.
Mm-hmm. It helps answer the questions.
Right.
So you were telling me you read Ramtha.
Yeah. Last year.
And that's because your sister kind of introduced it to you?
My brother-in-law's girlfriend.
Well, oh, okay.
They live together, but she might as well be his wife. So basically I call her my sister-in-law.
Your sister-in-law-to-be or whatever she is. And she introduced, and I've read Ramtha years ago, and I've always tried to prove some of the things that were said because some of them are just outrageous. And some of it has made a lot of sense over the years.
Yeah.
But it was so freeing, wasn't it? Very freeing.
Yeah.
A lot of it. And there's a lot of books like that. And it's really about a channeled entity for those of you that haven't heard of it. Jay-Z Knight is pretty well known. And she, back in the 70s, actually started channeling this entity by the name of Ramtha. Supposedly a 35,000-year-old spirit that knew her in that lifetime. And some of that might seem far-fetched to you, but even if it is, even if none of that is true, the things that were said in that white book and the other tapes I listened to really were freeing to me, letting me know that I was a divine spirit in my own and that it was up to me to find that. It really was my choice. And you had told me that, what's the gal's name?
Cindy.
Cindy had actually, I've read about this Ramtha School of Enlightenment, and I'm thinking, I don't know, this almost sounds like a cult now. She actually went to that.
Yeah, she went. They have a school school, I believe.
Yeah, in Washington.
Out in Washington. And she and her mother and brother all went attended it.
And how was that?
They really liked it. She's tried to, you know, live by the things that she's learned there. The one thing that she told me that really struck a chord in me is that when they're there, you know, I think before they graduate or whatever, she didn't tell me a lot about it, but just a little bit. But this one thing was really interesting. They are supposed to write down what they want in life on index cards. And apparently they have a big field, I don't know, a couple, 2-3 acres, whatever, and there's a fence around this field, and they're supposed, or the people from the school will hide their cards. They'll hide them randomly all over in this field or on the fence, wherever. So the person is blindfolded, and they have to use their intuition, their senses, you know, everything but their sight to find their card. So she was out there looking and trying to, and she actually found her card. And she said she just cried and cried and cried. She was so grateful and thankful. And I asked her, I said, well, have those things come true? And they pretty much have, that she wrote on those cards. Pretty much living that life now. So
it made a big change in her.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've read online some of the people that have gone. There's a group of people that are not happy with that school. And you wonder how much of it's propaganda. And and then you wonder.
Funny thing. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I wonder if either is people really upset about it or there are those that are just trying to run it down.
Well, I think that's the interesting thing. She did say, you know, and the only reason she started talking to me about it is because she'd never talked about it before. And she started to, because I mentioned, so we were kayaking down the Pier Marquette River up in near Ludington, east of Ludington. And it was a nice day, and we stopped to rest. And I said something, because I dumped, of course.
Did you really?
Coordinated. So I was saying, you know, and the funny thing is I had, that was my fear. It was my first time kayaking, and I didn't want to go, because I didn't want to dump. I don't want to dump. I'm going to dump. You know? Well, I said to her when we stopped, I said, see, I manifested that because I kept saying I don't want to, you know, dump. Right. And my fear was manifested because that's what I focused on. And that's when she started opening up. And she told me about it. And she did say that she doesn't talk to it about it to very many people unless she knows they're open to
it.
Because
that's the way I've been my whole life with everything I've learned. And so you were open to it at that moment, and you thought, well, what the heck, I'll take a look at this, especially after probably going through and talking to different mediums about your son.
Right.
It seems like there's a ton of knowledge out there, and I guess it'll come to us if we really want it. We will find...
Well, you attract it. You attract it.
And so, you know, people might be seeking things right now, and it's like, well, just continue to seek it and stop doubting that it'll come. I read somewhere in a book, it was actually the Masters of the Far East, they explained, and I don't know if this is true, but it makes sense to me, how the universe works, how God gives us things. We will receive anything as long as it's not, you know, to hurt someone else. And then again, we might get that if it's part of an agreement. But we will receive whatever we want, and it actually goes through, it has to come here from a non-physical form, and it's some kind of spiral. And it works its way down through the many different levels that exist, and I don't know how many there are. And then when it'll finally come here and manifest, and the better you get at it, like practicing, the quicker it'll come. But the minute you have a doubt, it stops, and it goes back the other way. So if you had a dream to become a dancer or whatever, and you keep doubting yourself, then it's going to keep spiraling back the other way. Sometimes there was a friend of mine that told me really a cool story. I don't know if you knew John St. Augustine when you were up here.
No.
I don't think he was quite working here then. He told me a story about a woman, I believe it's a true story, out in Hollywood this is back in the roaring 20s or slightly before that. And she wanted to become an actress. You know, they had the silent films back then. Maybe the talkies were starting to come around.
Yeah.
And she had knocked on every door and gone around to try to become this actress, and she had no luck. And she was so depressed that she killed herself. The day after she killed herself, a telegram came saying that she had been accepted for a part in a movie. And this is a great example, obviously, about learning to let go.
Right.
And not doubting ourselves too much.
Exactly. Well, I think, and that's where the emotion comes in, and the core belief. If you really, like I said, I had that core belief that I was supposed to do comedy. It was ingrained in me from mm-hmm. the time I was 7 years mm-hmm. old. And no matter, and I think the emotion was there with it that I believed I could do it and I should do it. So even through all the years of doubt, which I think kind of maybe was like an umbrella, it was there over the umbrella, but I kept pushing it back a little bit with all the doubt. And once I folded that umbrella up and put it away, that's when things started to rain down.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, that's cool. I hope it continues to go well for you. And you have an idea for the name of your book?
Yes.
Do you want to share it or no? Is that private?
Right now I'm calling it Will I Ever Laugh Again?
That sounds pretty neat.
Because you feel like when something like that happens that you will never laugh again.
Mm-hmm.
I want to let people know that you can and you will and you have to.
Right.
See, I believe in laughter and humor so much, and they've done so many studies, humor healing studies. Well, I don't know if you've ever heard of Norman Cousins.
I've heard the name. I don't know if I've heard.
He's written a few books, and he actually healed himself 3 different times from life-threatening illnesses with humor and laughter.
Absolutely. You know, they're doing research. Oh, I'm trying to think of the fella that has a talk show I really like listening to, but it's on Sirius Satellite, and I haven't listened to it in a while. Deepak Chopra.
Oh.
He had a show. He's got tons of great shows that I've listened to. But he talked about the research that they're doing where people will focus their thoughts on water. They'll get a group of people, and you've heard about this? And the water becomes more pure. And if they focus negative thoughts, it actually has got tainted.
Yeah, they've taken pictures of those, water that's been filled with hate.
And so it's like we know that we have this effect, and if a group of us can have even a more effect. So that's why, too, it's important to surround yourself with people that are the ones you want to be around, that make you feel good. And that's what you do, Kathy. I'm guessing you make people feel good.
I try really hard. And I think, you know, the comments that I get from different people all over is that I do, you know, oh, you made me feel good, or, you know, whatever. You helped me so much. And I've always tried to do that with my clients one-on-one or with my friends. Or, you know, all my life I've had people come to me for advice or, you know, for me to help them, because I think I have always had an intuition, you know, what they need. And I'll, in fact, I can't tell you how many times that with a client and stuff, I've given them whatever thought, like you say, the thought pops into my head. I don't even know where it comes from half the time, because, you know, I didn't go to college, I didn't go to psychology, didn't take it. I went to beauty school. So where these thoughts come from, whether it's me or whatever. But anyway, they'll say, you know, geez, you helped me more in that one sentence than 10 years of psychotherapy. So,
maybe we don't necessarily need all the things that we have. Some of it could be solved by learning to laugh and let go of things. And it's easier said than done a lot of times. It takes time, doesn't it?
Well, if you're laughing, it's hard to cry.
Hey, that's a good one, too. So what is your website if people want to find out more about you, Kathy?
Okay, it's www, of course, kathydice.com, and that's K-A-T-H-I-E, Dice, D-I-C-E, .com.
Is there anything else you want to add?
Just if you have a venue that you'd like to have somebody come and make you laugh, I'm open. Give me a holler. I will travel. The price is right.
You know, and then people that are listening to this probably aren't ones that are going to book. But maybe you could do, like, phone jokes. You know, people could call you, and you could make a buck that way, you know? Hey, I'll make you laugh for 5 minutes. $5 for 5 minutes. How about that?
Well, I also do. I don't do just stand-up comedy. I've got 3 solo shows that I do that I have written and perform, and I perform them all over. One is about the Virgin Mary, and there's an interesting story behind that, if I've got time, if you don't mind.
Sure.
This was a number of years after my son died, and I was at church on Christmas Eve, I was standing in the aisleway waiting for whatever to go, I guess. And all of a sudden, it was like out of the blue, this thought hit me. It was like, boom. And I was like, where did that come from? the thought was, what do you mean I'm pregnant? Don't you, like, have to be in the same room together? And it was Mary speaking.
Right.
And for about, I don't know, 7 years, I had that thought in my head, carrying it. And it was like, write this solo show. Write it, write it, write it. And finally, I sat down to write it. It took me 9 months to birth it.
Yeah.
And it all came together, and I was like, a lot of inspiration, a lot of divine inspiration, inspiration from other people, and I wrote this show, and it was amazing because that was probably one of the big cathartic moments in my life, writing that, mm-hmm. and relating to Mary, because she lost her son, and, you know, he was very instrumental in the universe, whereas my son was instrumental at the church. So it was kind of like, there was a, I mean, I'm not comparing them, but there was a connection there. So it was very cathartic to write that and to be able to do it, perform it. Mm-hmm. And I also have a show about Adam and Eve, that's a comedy, and then I do one about Eleanor Roosevelt that is not a comedy. It's about her life and a lot of the trivial stuff that people don't know about. And I do interject a lot of humor into that, too. So.
That's cool. That's cool. Do you have any discs or anything like that that you sell or anything?
I don't yet. I'm working on it.
Okay. So people can't, if they go to your website, can they sample and listen to anything you do?
Yeah, there's a couple of clips on there. I'm going to upload a few more eventually, but there's a couple of the Eleanor, and there's some of my stand-up on there.
How much longer before you think your book's going to be out?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm trying to get it done by this summer at least,
okay.
Maybe sooner.
Well, cool. You know, that maybe that's one way I can help you for doing this for me today, is that we can promote your book, and then anybody that's listening, you know, can say, okay, well, maybe I'm going to buy her book and see what she has to say about that. Because it really, I think it's so cool that you're mixing, you know, it's something that is going to appeal to every one of us. We're all going to have some humor in our life, but we're also going to have some tragedy. And to mix the two together, to look at the lighter side of it, even some tragedy like that, probably could help a lot of people. So,
well, that's my hope. What I'm intentioning right now is to have a publisher fall in my lap, so I can get this book published. I could self-publish, but I know that involves a lot of self-promoting. I mean, if that's the way it's going to be, it's the way it's going to be. But I really would like to have somebody come in and say, I'll publish your book and we'll promote it.
Hmm. But then you still got to do a lot of promoting, too, I think, after that. You got to probably go to all these book places and sign and all that.
Well, that's fine, as long as they set up the meeting.
Well, Kathy, I really appreciate talking to you, and it's so nice to hear from you. Everybody's doing good. Steve's doing good and everything.
So. Oh, yeah. He retired.
So, well, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is wonderful.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.